Additionally, Snelson is a certified professional broadcast engineer and 8VSB specialist with the SBE, and was recognized as Broadcast Engineer of the Year in 2001. It is a pleasure to have you tonight, and ladies and gentlemen, welcome Joe Snelson.
Thank you, Kevin. I was telling somebody a little bit earlier, I don't know which is tougher, if it's tougher to do these talks or if it's easier to do these talks after lunch or after dinner. Obviously, after it can be tougher if you're trying to keep your audience awake. It can be a lot easier because if they fall asleep, you can say or do just about anything and nobody knows. But anyhow, to get started here, I want to thank you all for having me here and allowing me to speak. And it's an honor to be here. And your broadcaster's clinic is very impressive. And I was able to sit in on several of the sessions today. And wow, very worthwhile. So I applaud you for that. I always have to open my presentations with this, with the old monoscope test pattern. Actually, I found out that it actually does serve a valuable purpose because I've had a lot of people use this thing to set up their slide presentations and what have you. So anyhow, I threw that in there. Well, again, I'm also honored to be the SBE president during the 50th anniversary of SBE. It's a great opportunity, and I consider myself very fortunate. And I also appreciate the opportunity to come here tonight to talk to you about the anniversary of SBE. I want to talk about where we came from, where we are, and where we are going. A little bit about myself. As Kevin mentioned going in, I've been in broadcasting for 44 years. I think on the flyers that were sent out, you'll see some before and after pictures. The fella standing there leaning over the console, I guess that would be the before picture. The before picture you see in your in the flyer was taken probably in the late 70s when hairstyling and everything was kind of popular. As you can see, that picture there probably used about 2 cups of water on my hair to get it glued down. But that's me there in the broadcasting department at Los Angeles City College. And you see me working with some of the students, many times the instructors, after the instructors found out that I kind of had a technical mind, and they kind of watched me, and of course I was doing a lot of my own reading and everything on the side. They finally kind of said, well, I'll tell you what, Joe, why don't you just go ahead and help them through some of this stuff on the cameras and so on and so forth, and then they just kind of sat in the back and jawed a little bit while I taught, but it actually was quite enjoyable and a very pleasant experience. I first heard of SBE in the early 70s. I went to work at a UHF station in the Los Angeles area, and interestingly enough, the gentleman I worked for is a charter member of SBE. And at that time that I was talking to him, I would probably say, in fact, I'm almost sure that SBE wasn't even 10 years old yet. And I remember seeing this certificate on his wall. I asked him what it was, and he told me about this society that was recently formed. And so I thought, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. And I didn't think much about it until in about 75, I get something in the mail, and it talks about the society doing a certification program. Well, I was pretty young in the business. I mean, only been in the business for probably about 6 years. So I didn't qualify for the initial round of induction into the certification program. So again, I looked at it and I kind of filed it on the shelf and thought about it. Well, it wasn't until I moved to Kansas City to put a UHF station on the air that I met a gentleman by the name of Jack McCain, who maybe many of you know. Jack is a past president of SBE. And anyhow, it was through his efforts that Chapter 59 started. And so I got active in Chapter 59. And then a little bit later, in 1981, the certification exams were coming along. I finally thought, I'm going to take this opportunity, and I actually went for my senior and And I passed it. And I think without revealing any SVE secrets or whatever, my essay question was draw a block diagram of a 2-inch quad machine. And I think I can safely say that now because I don't think we're going to get very many of those questions being handed out now. But that was my first question. And anyhow, as they would say, the rest is history. I've been involved in an SVE kind of ever since. I've been a frequency coordinator. I served as a local certification chairman. And then, obviously, I moved on up. I was on the SVE National Certification Committee, and then on the board, and then vice president and president. So it's been quite an honor for me. We have a special presentation that was produced actually by John Paré with the help of others. And they assembled a video that outlines the formation of the society and some of the highlights along the way. And maybe some of you have seen this. I've watched it several times now, and it seems like every time I watch it, I pick up some new little tidbit that I didn't know before. So with that, we'll watch our presentation.
The year 2014 marks the 50th anniversary of the Society of Broadcast Engineers. Over those 50 years, thousands of broadcast engineers have been a part of the SBE, and many of them have contributed to the organization's growth and development. This program is a look back at some of the people and events that have helped shape the society. John Battison was born in England in 1915. He was fascinated with electronics, and specifically radio, at an early age. A native of England, he earned a degree in theoretical physics. A self-taught pilot, he served as a flight instructor for the RAF, and later flew combat missions in both fighters and bombers during World War II. He came to the U.S. in 1945, and his career took him to many locations in the U.S., Middle East, and Africa. In 1961, Battison was serving as editor of Broadcast Engineering magazine when he wrote an editorial that would serve to be the initial catalyst in the organization of the SBE. At the 2011 SBE National Meeting in Columbus, Ohio, Battison spoke about how the SBE began.
I'm also very happy for my brainchild and that SBE is doing so well. And I've been a member of the IRE for a long time. And then back in the early 60s, they decided to join and become the IEEE. And I felt that radio was going to lose its clout. So I sat down at the editorial desk of where I was editor of the Broadcast Engineering. I was a consulting engineer in those days, but Broadcast Engineering needed an editor, and I said I would do it till they got somebody whom they liked. So I took advantage of the fact that I had access to the pages of the, and I suggested that we formed a new society. And 32 people answered me. 31 people said it was a jolly good idea. One said it was damn silly.
After the promising response, Battison published a number of the letters he received in subsequent issues of the magazine, hoping that someone would come forward to organize the effort. When no one did, he struck out on his own. With the help of family members, he mailed almost 5,000 letters to broadcast engineers in the U.S. and Canada. He also published a membership application in the magazine. A few informal meetings were held with interested engineers, including in the Binghamton, New York area. When he finally felt enough interest had been generated, he held the first official meeting during the 1964 NAB convention at the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Chicago. Approximately 100 broadcast engineers from across the country attended the meeting. At the meeting, the decision was made to form a new professional association devoted to the needs and interests of broadcast engineers. Those assembled decided to call it the Institute of Broadcast Engineers, but over concerns that the acronym, IBE, would be confused with a labor union, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, or IBEW, the first order of business was to immediately change the name to the Society of Broadcast Engineers. From that point, Battison chaired a steering committee to help guide the organization during its first year. He edited and produced the Society's first membership publication, the Journal of the Society of Broadcast Engineers, which included technical articles submitted by members. The early issues included a full-page advertisement from Electrovoice. one of the first three companies to join the SBE as a sustaining member. That first issue, released in June of 1964, also included prominently an article from FCC Chairman E. William Henry, who welcomed the society and extolled the importance of the engineer to the broadcast industry. Within the first 2 months of the organization's existence, five chapters were formed. Chapter 1 in Binghamton, New York, was followed by Chapter 2 in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Chapter 3 in Hutchinson, Kansas, Chapter 4 in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Chapter 5 in Atlanta, Georgia. Chapter 1 was chaired by Charles Hallinan, a radio station chief engineer in Binghamton and a charter member of the SBE. He and other local engineers had an informal group that had already been meeting, and he offered to Battison that it become Chapter 1 of the new SBE. The first official meeting of Chapter 1 was held in June 1964 at the Your Home Library in Johnson City, New York. Another charter member, Gino Ricardelli, eventually chaired the chapter, freeing up Hallinan to serve at the national level as executive vice president and later the SBE's second president. The SBE's second annual meeting was held on March 20, 1965 at the Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C., site of that year's NAB convention. The first officers were elected, with Battison as president, Hallinan as executive vice president, Robert Houston of Dafuniac Springs, Florida as secretary, and Ambrose Bill Kramer of Arlington, Virginia as treasurer. By that time, seven more chapters had been organized. Hallinan was elected the Society's second president in 1966, and then as secretary for several years. By 1971, the leadership of the SBE, led by President Bob Flanders, felt the need to take the next step in the organization's development and move the administration of the SBE from Hallinan's kitchen table in Binghamton to Indianapolis. Flanders, who was the director of engineering at WRTV Television in Indianapolis, hired a secretary for a few hours a month to keep the society's membership records. In 1975, the board adopted a proposal to create a certification program for the society. Members John Wilner, Ben Wolfe, and Jim Willeman are credited with making the certification program a reality. By 1977, the first certification exams were administered. Willeman would lead the program as its volunteer chairman and director for almost 20 years. The certification program would grow in scope, size, and respect within the industry, and today, more than 4,700 active certifications are in place. In 1980, to memorialize the life of member, author, and teacher Harold Ennis, his home chapter in Indianapolis formed the Harold Ennis Scholarship Fund Trust. The following year, the chapter gave the trust to the National SBE to provide broader exposure. Today, the Ennis Trust provides educational programming and support to educational projects as well as scholarships. The first independent national convention of the society was held in 1986 in St. Louis, and these continued through 1996, held in various cities across the country. The early conventions were well attended, but as the industry changed, a standalone convention was deemed no longer viable, and in 1997, the SBE adopted a new concept, holding an annual national meeting in conjunction with a regional industry event, usually sponsored by an SBE chapter. This provided the SBE with a stage to present its annual awards while spotlighting the programs of the regional event. Chapters have always been where many SBE members realize the greatest value in their membership. It's where members come together, share their knowledge, experience, and develop friendships. Over the years, SBE chapters have offered countless opportunities for members to learn, receive recognition from their peers, provide opportunities for leadership, and experience a fraternal bond, and just talk shop. From the very beginning of the SBE, the Spring Convention of the National Association of Broadcasters has played an important role. No single event annually attracts more SBE members than the NAB show. For many years, the SBE has exhibited at the show and used the opportunity to forge relationships with other industry groups. The annual spring membership meeting held during the show provides another opportunity for member recognition, camaraderie, and fun. Since 1995, the SBE, in cooperation with the Ennis Trust, has been a producing partner with the NAB of the NAB Broadcast Engineering Conference. Since the 1980s, the SBE has worked to represent the interests of broadcast engineers on technical regulatory matters at the national level. The SBE has filed comments with the FCC on dozens of issues, many regarding broadcast auxiliary spectrum matters. Occasional trips to the nation's capital have been made to meet with industry organizations and make our case with FCC officials. In 1977, to help local broadcasters avoid harmful interference in the BAS bands, the SBE created a national network of volunteer frequency coordinators. Modeled after the efforts of Chapter 47 in Los Angeles and others, the SBE encouraged every chapter to recruit a member to serve as their local frequency coordinator. Today, more than 150 members fill these roles. In 1999, the effectiveness of this volunteer service led to a 10-year relationship with the National Football League, providing game day frequency coordinators for all NFL games. Education is one of the pillars of the SBE, especially continuing education for those in the field to keep up with changes in technology and government relations. Together, local chapters and the National SBE have provided thousands of educational opportunities over the years through meetings, special seminars, workshops, and courses. Since 2008, the SBE has utilized the Internet to deliver live and archived webinars and in-depth courses. Since 1997, the SBE has presented the Leadership Development Course, a 3-day intensive seminar led by instructors from Purdue University that teaches leadership and management skills to broadcast engineers. Since the 1990s, the SBE has also provided educational opportunities through SBE publications. These have included books on digital television, HD radio, EAS, station operations, and master control handbook. Since its beginning in 1964, the Society has continued to grow and now numbers more than 5,300 members and 114 chapters. Members are found in every U.S. state, several U.S. territories and possessions, and in 29 other countries.
I like the way that the people who came after me have done the work. I was the first president, but the people who followed me have put a great deal of work and hard labor into the progress of the SBE. And I think that everybody who's been mentioned certainly deserves the applause and the accolade that they're receiving.
The SBE will continue to provide educational opportunities, recognition of experience and knowledge through certification and service, and a community of like-minded professionals from which to learn and grow, and yes, have some fun. The past 50 years have seen tremendous change in the broadcasting industry. Perhaps the most change has been in technology. The SBE continues to adapt to meet the needs of our members and is looking to the future as broadcasting and its technology continue to be redefined.
I think John and his staff did a great job on producing that video. Building on to it, let's take a blast back to the past. In the video, it was mentioned about the publication, and I actually was sent a 4 volumes of the first editions. These are copies, and it was sent to me by Ken Benner, who is also a charter member of SBE, and he sent these to me. And it's kind of interesting going through and reading the various articles in here. And one of the things that I found about this, it was kind of interesting, if you can kind of make out the insignia or the logo in the background, which is a polar pattern. And of course, you also notice the name, the Journal of the Society of Broadcast Engineers, which eventually was changed to the Signal. In the second one, again, this is the same one, volume one, number one, and I was looking over the table of contents. And as mentioned in the video, it also shows the first 5 chapters. They're shown there on the bottom left, Binghamton, New York, Scranton, Pennsylvania, Hutchinson, Kansas, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Atlanta, Georgia. And the society was guided by a steering committee until the bylaws were ultimately adopted. And again, in the video, it mentioned the letter that we received from the FCC, the then FCC chairman. And I at first was going to read this, but in for the lack of time, I just couldn't find myself to being able to do that and get you out of here at a decent time. But I did notice that there, I was kind of looking at the bottom of it, and his closing line was, "We look forward to our close and fruitful association in the coming years." And indeed, through the years, SB has made various comments, filed comments with the FCC, and we certainly intend to move it forward in the interest of our members. The insert here from the, and this actually was from Volume 1, Number 3, published December of 1964, and the reason I actually pulled this out was due to the emblem in the lower right, which I will magnify. And it says here, SBE emblem, here is a suggestion for an SBE lapel badge or pin. It represents a microphone with antenna and ground symbols surrounding a TV camera. Background could be blue and various levels, indicating degrees of membership level. Comments, please. So they were open to hearing what folks had to say. And actually, the first logo was somewhat officially adopted in 1965, which maybe many of you remember that. And actually, these are scans from my tie pins, is the way that I actually created these. That continued until circa 1973, when the mod emblem kind of began to come forth. And that continued through. And by the way, I don't have any end dates on these because I found in going through my records there's overlaps of these logos and emblems and pins because people still wanted some of the older ones or one thing or another. So I didn't put a termination date. These dates just represent the approximate time when they were rolled out and introduced. And then the other one in 1990 was the concentric circle. And that one we have somewhat maintained, but it has been modified going forward from 1990, with the first one being the black and white print media. And by the way, these are available on the SBE website should you choose as a member to use them. However, we would ask that you would respect the use, the methods of use that are outlined on the webpage. But you can see the first one there for black and white print media, the color print media, which is a rather flat color, and then followed by the one used for websites, which is the one with the embossed. And that brings us to the current logo, which was introduced at our October 2014 national meeting. And again, probably someone looks at it, well, what's the difference? Well, we tried to make the SBE a little bit bigger inside the pen. And again, we tried to put some coloring and around the embossing there to kind of give it some style. So that's kind of the current logo that that we're using. Early SBE development certification program, as many of you know, and was stated in the video, started in 1975 with the first exams given in 1977. The national involvement and frequency coordination began in 1977. I oftentimes say I was at what I call the birthday of frequency coordination when a group of engineers in the Los Angeles area gathered around a table at CBS Television City in Hollywood to try to figure out how in the world they were going to make sense out of the frequency congestion and interference. And I've always kind of referred to that as at least what I consider the birthday of frequency coordination. So anyhow, I was proud to be involved in that. The next one is the NS Educational Foundation Trust Fund, began in 1980. And as I think everybody knows, Leonard Charles of Chapter 24 serves as one of the trustees and secretary for the NS Educational Foundation Trust. And the first national convention occurred in 1986. By the late 90s, number of certifications grew to more than 5,000, which I find is phenomenal. I think that's great. They're a good tribute to the program. And we began serving as presenting partner of the NAB Broadcast Engineering Conference in 1994. And the first SBE-sponsored leadership development management course basically began in 1997. And the first live educational webinars and first online educational programs began in 2008. Levels of SBE membership, maybe you've seen these before. As you can see, there is eight of them. The first seven that went by were basically established when the society was. The last one, the youth membership, was established in 1999. Honorary members, and again, I won't read all of these, but I found some interesting names on here. First of all, Elma Farnsworth. I found kind of interesting, and someone said, well, wait a minute, obviously relationship to Philo, yes, wife, but as I read and heard more about it, she was kind of the main note taker and assistant to him, basically his lab assistant, as he worked on his inventions regarding television and built it along the way. Then we also see, someone probably might have noticed Goldwater in there. And while I don't know the exact history of all of these, I did find out from John Perret that at least one thing he noted about it is that Barry Goldwater was an avid amateur radio operator, big time. So he did that. Let's look at the Lifetime Achievement Award winners. Some of these were mentioned. Again, you'll see Elma Farnsworth and Philo T. Farnsworth. Some others that you'll see on here, James Woolaman, obviously the father of certification, as we sometimes have coined. And we see others down here, Richard Rudman, and John Battison, of course, and then Terrence Bond. Very well-deserved honor. Yes, he's right back there. Let's take a look locally, and I felt this was very appropriate, being that we're in the setting that we're in. A little bit about some history of the chapters in this area, and we'll begin with chapter 24. We have here a letter from the chapter's first chair, Don Borchert, to his boss, describing the first ever meeting of chapter 24, and I am going to read that real briefly. The proposed Madison chapter of the Society of Broadcast Engineers met in Studio B on Tuesday, April 8th. According to the latest published roster of the various chapters throughout the country, this will be the largest and hopefully the most active. We already have more than 30 established members. During this organizational meeting, an election of officers was held. I, as the chairman, Dale King, assistant chief engineer, WISC-TV, as vice chairman, and Robert Wickham, Engineering Director, Mid-Continent, Wisconsin. And the program committee was also approved. Robert Zilsdorf, Engineering Supervisor at WKOW, Eugene Zastro, Engineering Supervisor at WHA-TV, and Rudy Wolf, Engineer with WHA. So there was the letter that came out in April of 69. And then when the chapter got established, I have a letter here from Charles Hallinan. Dear Mr. Wickham, thank you very much for your letter of April 14th and the applications which you forwarded. Congratulations to you and your associates for getting the Madison chapter established. I regret that no national officer or director was able to attend your initial meeting. Perhaps this can be arranged for some future date. Judging from the attendance report and the number of applications you already sent us, it appears that the Madison chapter will be one of the larger and more active groups. As soon as you have had three meetings, we will forward a check for $100 to assist you in starting your local treasury. There are additional ways in which you can raise money for your treasury. Several of the chapters obtain a prize or prizes from local wholesale distributors to be raffled at their meeting. Their money derived from the raffle goes to the chapter treasury. The chapter may wish to ask for donations, but may not issue membership cards. Your chapter will be known as Chapter 24. We are forwarding additional applications and bylaws for your use. Be sure to have a good program schedule for every meeting, as this is the secret of success in local chapters. If you need program suggestions, refer to the reports of other chapter meetings as they are reported in the journal. This may give you fresh ideas. The individuals who have submitted applications will receive a letter of acknowledgement. The applications will be processed as quickly as possible. If we can be of any further help, please be sure to let me know. Sincerely yours, Charles Hallinan, Executive Secretary. And the other thing they sent along, and I won't read these, but I do think they were very notable articles that were from newspaper clippings. mentioning the establishment of the chapter, which I think is kind of a real cool thing. Then also the here's a meeting report, very short. Encouraged attendance at annual meeting of National SBE in Chicago on Sunday, 4570 at 2 p.m. Plan for discussion at April meeting of reactions to national meeting for those able to attend. So there was a meeting report. And I'm not going to name all these folks, but you can see them pictured and you'll see their names go by. Fine group of folk at a Chapter 24, 1977 SBE meeting. And then looking at some of the earlier chapter meetings, and you can see the dates there. I certainly noticed a few that kind of struck home with me. I saw the one on RCA TV tape and made me think back when I was a teenager. One of the first books I bought was on TV tape fundamentals, written by Harold Ennis, no less. Excellent book, helped kind of get me jump-started and going. Another one that was in there that I kind of liked was the Heathkit computer. Now, I didn't have a Heathkit computer. My first one was a Sinclair Z80, if any of you remember that little thing with a little membrane pad you plugged into a TV set. And then the other one I found of interest was the one on lightning, because at my station out in L.A. where I worked, we were kind of one of the test beds for lightning elimination associates, LEA, Roy Carpenter, who basically was working on dissipating energy around a transmitter site so that it would hopefully avoid lightning strikes on the tower. The next one, again, we'll watch the names go by. I think you'd recognize them all without the names, although it seems like, I don't know how he does it, it seems like Leonard never ages. I don't quite know how he does that, but anyhow. Here's a group, again, hopefully you can read the names. I'm not going to bother going and down and reading them all. This was taken at Chapter 24's 2004 Broadcasters Clinic, which was what, only a decade ago. So hopefully you get a chance to see that. Look at Chapter 28, Milwaukee. The first official meeting held in September of 1970 at the WTMJ Auditorium, and the first presentation was given by Lou Burrows, charter member of the SBE and a fellow of the AES on microphone applications. And I will take a moment to just read what was submitted from Chapter 28 on this. Lou was VP President for ElectroVoice in Buchanan, Michigan, holder of 23 patents on ElectroVoice acoustic products, developed the first noise-canceling microphone during World War II. Other inventions include the variable D dynamic microphone, first practical lavalier microphone, and the co-founder of ElectroVoice, Inc. Lou's presentations on mic construction and handling always included a demonstration on the ruggedness of the dynamic microphone. In the segment of the presentation that became known as the Buchanan Hammer, he would unplug the dynamic mic he was using, proceed to use it to drive a nail into a piece of wood, then plug it back in and continue the show. Let me demonstrate. No, I won't. the chapter officers for the first meeting, chapter founder Jake Seagraves at WTMJ-TV, chapter chair Jim Woolerman, WTMJ Stations, vice chair, program chair, Ed Will, I hope that's right, forgive me if I mispronounce any of these, KenCom, secretary treasurer Dave Zurich, and the newsletter Jake Seagraves, WTMJ. More on the chapter history, members that serve the society on the national level. Jim Woolerman, past president and past certification committee chairman, also known as the father of the SBE certification program. And by the way, Jim is also a charter member of the SBE. Terry Bond, past president and former certification committee chairman and current certification committee member. Bob Truscott, past secretary. Gary Tim, past EAS committee member. Chris Tarr, past board member. And Rick Ryan, certification committee member. Some of the meeting locations. For many years, the meeting home was the 325-seat broadcast auditorium at WTMJ. Then expanded out to various radio and TV facilities throughout the metropolitan Milwaukee area. They had field trips to the Cost Corporation, WE Energy's power plant, an NWS reporting facility, the Bob Paquette Microphone Museum, again, I hope I pronounced that right, and the Clark Wire and Cable Company, and many more. Look real briefly at Chapter 80, Fox Valley. Late 1970s, an informal group of broadcast engineers supported a monthly luncheon in Neenah, organized by John Bredesen. And let's see, in 1981, Appleton radio engineers had an interest in forming a chapter of the SBE. An organizational meeting was held at Lawrence University in Appleton. And Wendell P. Bud Tidley of Electronic Industries in Oshkosh convened a small group consisting of Larry Page, WLFM, Gordon Daly, WNAM, and Steve Brown, WHBY. Tedley suggested the chapter be called the Fox Valley and Northern Chapter to include many of the smaller outlying radio stations whose engineers could feel quite isolated. Steve Brown volunteered to be the first chairman. The meetings moved from Neenah to the Highland House Restaurant in Kaukauna in the hopes that that the chapter could attract engineers from Green Bay to attend the meetings. I would say anytime you hold a meeting in a restaurant, there's always a good chance you're going to increase that probability. And Gary Mock, University of Wisconsin, encouraged Green Bay area engineers to support the new Chapter 80. And in 1983, the meetings moved to the Out of the Town Club in Kaukauna. Gary Mock became the next chairman of the chapter in 1983. And he was the first chairman to preside over the combined group of Green Bay and Fox Valley broadcast engineers. The N Northern was dropped when Chapter 112 was formed. And today, Chapter 80 has about 45 active members. And the monthly lunchtime meeting on Highway 41 between Oshkosh and Green Bay continues a 35-year tradition in Northeast Wisconsin. Congratulations, guys. It's great. Chapter 112. In late 1988 and early 1989, decision was made to form a chapter. It started with phone calls and a cut-and-paste newsletter. Many hours were spent licking stamps, and I'll kind of throw in parenthetically when I was talking to Victoria Battison at the NAB meeting, and she was just a small girl when John began to start the society and send the letters out. Victoria shared with me that she helped lick the stamps. So when I saw that, I thought of that. Many times, people have gotten right in there and they've done the work. Meetings scheduled and held around La Crosse and Eau Claire Market, inviting any and all radio and television engineers. And from an initial group of approximately 11 or 12 individuals, a core swarm of folks would set up and travel to either end of Eau Claire La Crosse Market to hold a meeting. And chapter status was granted in January of 1990. They had some various awards given from SBE National in 1992, Best Chapter Society Office Liaison, 1992, Highest Chapter Meeting Attendance, 1993, Best Regional Convention or Conference, and this was a shared effort between chapters 24, 28, 80, and 112. And in 2000, the most certified chapter in the Class A group. And in 2000, the best chapter frequency coordination effort, also in the Class A group. And they sent along some pictures, And I'll click through these. Again, I'm not going to take time to read them. Always interesting for me to look at some of the pieces of equipment and say, can you identify what some of this is? Master control room there. While they were installing under construction for new automation going in. And a visit to the Cray Computer Museum. And here we have some more pictures from the museum. But one picture I kind of found interesting was the caption underneath the one on the right-hand side, which said Dr. Cray's office replication. But what I noticed in the background on the shelf was boots. I didn't quite tie that in, but maybe a little later someone can maybe brief me on that if there is a significance. Some more pictures. Last moments of a annual steak fry and summer meeting, and then a couple of engineers there during a tower resurrection visit meeting, Fairchild. And of course, what engineers like to do best, on the left, the annual steak fry and last moments of the summer meeting. And then looking into a piece of equipment. And again, a digital television transmitter, and also three individuals at the annual steak fry in last moments of the summer meeting. Okay, an SBE timeline, and again, this is kind of a recap of some of the events. This is not the total timeline. I kind of telescoped it down. In 61, an editorial by John Battison in BE Magazine suggests a new organization should be formed for radio and TV engineers. And in 1964 is when the first organizational meeting was held, and the decision for the name to be the Society of Broadcast Engineers was selected, and then a steering committee was named. And in 1965, the first officers were elected, with John Battison being the first president. In 1967, SBE incorporated in the District of Columbia. Some have asked maybe why that is, and from the best that I've been able to dig up and find out, number one, we felt we needed a D.C. president. Number two, it was most likely our council was in D.C. at the time, so it was just an easy way to get established. In 1970, the first regional convention in Owego, New York, sponsored by Channel 1, Chapter 1, and then ultimately moved to Syracuse in 1972 and sponsored by Chapter 22. In 1971, national operations moved to Indianapolis, Indiana by President Robert Flanders. In 72, SBE urges the FCC to modify and strengthen operator licensing requirements. And one of these journals actually has an article about that, by the way. It was kind of interesting. In 75, a proposal for an SBE certification program was approved by the board, and volume one, number one of the SBE Signal is published during Jim Woolman's second term as president. First certification exam became available in 77, and our national network of frequency coordinators was established. We covered that earlier. And in 1980, Chapter 25 in Indianapolis establishes the Harold S. Ennis Scholarship Fund Trust. Moving along, in 1986, the first national SBE convention was held in St. Louis. In 1989, it inaugurates the SBE National Awards Program. In 1993, national teleconference via satellite from Madison, Wisconsin, with Chapter 24. The pictures, I think you saw of that a little bit earlier. 1994, the first SBE National Convention was held as a part of the World Media Expo in Los Angeles. And then also in 1994, SBE becomes a partner with NAB to present the annual NAB Engineering Conference. And in 1996, SBE publishes the SBE Emergency Alert System Primer. And in 97, SBE begins with Leadership Skills Course after it's discontinued by NAB. In 2000, SBE institutes its first computer networking certification, Certified Broadcast Networking Technologist, CBNT. Thank you, Terry Bond, for his hard work in bringing that to fruition. With the Ennis Trust, more than $250,000 was raised to benefit families of 6 broadcast technicians lost on a dreadful day in 9/11. 2007, the first SBE national webcast emanates from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And in 2008, first SBE educational programs, webinars were produced live via the internet. And in 2014, SBE celebrates its 50th anniversary. That's kind of a telescope version. I do want to mention at the end of this, we have two timelines up here. The one on my left is what I mentioned, but with a lot of other events on it that kind of help fill in more. Take a look at that, but then be sure to sign the member timeline over here on my right, which gives the member numbers. Sign above your member number, and that will be kept for posterity. Okay, where we are, you'll notice the vacuum tubes and in discrete components on the left, followed by the digits on the right. The SBE certification program continues to move forward, recognizing and raising the professional status of broadcast engineers. Many of you remember that. I won't go into detail on it, other than the fact that I know when I went to get mine, I had to use one of these kind of things. I did hold this thing up to a bunch of students that I did this presentation for at NAB. Surprisingly, several of them knew what it was, but others probably looked at it and said, well, it looks like a logarithm on a stick, which is what it is. But anyhow. but of course, as we all know, the first class license went bye-bye, and SBE stepped in and created the certification program, and certainly a program to be able to recognize the abilities of the broadcast engineer. And you'll see going by there the 12 different classifications of certification pins that we have associated with the certification. We also have 3 specialist certifications, the DRB, the Digital Radio Broadcast, AMD for AM Directional, and 8VSB. SBE education opportunities, many of you know these already, so I won't dwell a long time on them. Certainly the NS workshops, there are one-day events with multiple topics, obviously the most famous one being held at the NAB during the Broadcast Engineering Conference. We also have a number of live online courses, and some of those are made free to our members. And on SBE education opportunities, we have the SBE University, which is the web archive courses. They're affordable, and we keep them at lower cost for our members. Other opportunities, leadership development courses, and of course, as I hope everybody knows, continuing education counts towards SBE recertification. Where we're headed? We're going to build on our legacy. We'll continue to build on that, creation of more webinars. We're going to add content to the SBE University. We're going to continue our review of certification question pools. This is an ongoing, very challenging now with obviously analog television virtually going to go away for good, although the FCC did suspend the construction deadlines on those, so they can still be, we have still some translators that could be on for a while in analog. But nevertheless, the questions are being reviewed on analog altogether and to see what can stay and what needs to be replaced. Active involvement in the broadcast auxiliary spectrum frequency coordination. We're going to file with the FCCs on proceedings that affect our members. Completion of our strategic plan strategies. That's from our 2012 strategic plan process. And we're going to plan for future strategic planning. And then we're going to provide additional support for chapters as requested. And we're going to explore added value benefits to our members. And speaking of the strategic plan, the branding of the society was one of the topics that was brought up during that meeting, and possibly exploring the rebranding of the society. The committee was formed to explore a possible name change. Was a name change warranted? In that survey, we set out several of them to various members of the SBE, to non-members of the SBE, and also our sustaining members, as well as just general outside industry from the SBE. in broadcasting, but not necessarily tied in with engineering, just to see their perception of the name. The survey results indicated that the current name is indeed strongly recognized. The committee decided that a tagline would be appropriate more than changing the name of our society. Another committee was formed to explore a tagline, and the decision on the tagline was reached and presented to the board, and the board accepted the tagline at its April 2014 board meeting, and then that was, of course, introduced at our national meeting just a few weeks ago. And I would like to add that there were two people from the Wisconsin area that served on those committees, thanks to Todd Betcher, who served on the first committee as we explored whether a name change was warranted. And then, of course, Leonard Charles from Chapter 24 in Madison participated in the second committee in coming up with the SBE's new tagline, which hopefully everyone has seen right now, the Association for Broadcast and Multimedia Technology Professionals. I think they did a very good job on that. Social networking. Goal of the SBE is to attract new young members. A younger generation is mobile in communication, as even the other end of the spectrum. I mean, we all carry these things around, and iPads, one thing or another anymore. Networking is the norm for all of us. SBE must stay in touch with all of its members. A new committee was adopted by the SBE board in 2014. The Social Networking Committee is chaired by Kim Sachs. And the goal is to expand SBE presence on the various social networks. And I would encourage you to direct any thoughts or comments to Kim. If you have any on this whole effort of social networking, all are welcomed. The next one is that of mentoring. This was originally envisioned in 2012, and it's to allow SBE members a resource for technical skill development. Another new committee was adopted by the SBE board to that end, the Mentoring Committee, and it's chaired by Eric Schechter. And Eric will be recruiting members for his committee, and is in actually the process of doing that now. A plan will be submitted to the board in the April 2015 meeting. Mentoring is of a high interest to educators, and I had a story I was going to tell, but in the essence of time, I'll just say that I had an opportunity to sit on a panel while I was at the national meeting, and I will tell you, when I mentioned mentoring, the educators, their antennas went up, and certainly overall, I think there's a need to be able to have that resource for people coming into this business to be able to call upon the seasoned broadcast engineer to pick their brain on the various technologies and things that are out there that we deal with daily. So contact Eric if you have thoughts or comments, and again, all are welcome. SBE membership growth, produce more career guidance in literature, develop a detailed social media policy, that goes hand in hand with the social networking. Develop an up-to-date chapter guidelines and online training for chapter officers. I think that's an important one because unfortunately not all of our chapters throughout the whole society are as active as you all have been here in Wisconsin. So hopefully we can take what we learn from successful events and kind of package that up and maybe help others so that they can grow their chapters. And expand the scope of membership beyond just the traditional broadcast engineering. Regulatory issues affecting our future, BAS encroachment and sharing, EAS change education, as that changes, we're going to need to educate our members on it. Wireless microphone spectrum. Someday I may not even be able to use this thing to talk to you. I don't know. I hope so, but we got to see where spectrum's going to end up. AM improvements. And then, of course, for the television side, ATSC 3.0. So, moving it forward, it has been said, plan your work, then work your plan. And we have a busy year ahead of us. And with all of us, and I mean both on the national level and the individual members working together, we will see the SBE grow and continue to be a valuable source to our members by advancing the science of engineering for broadcast and multimedia professionals through education and deserved recognition. Thank you very much.